Today's episode of Gluck Radio is proudly brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks, offering titles in every genre. Now, I want you to go and get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/gluckradio. There are over 150,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. If you're a fan of this show, you might like to download American Savage by my fellow podcaster and sex advice columnist, Dan Savage. Or how about Crush It? Why now is the time to cash in on your passion by Gary Vaynerchuk. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/gluckradio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/gluckradio. Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach, clinical hypnotist, and problem solver. Breaking up is hard to do. Remember that song? But it's true. Regardless of who caused it, it's a deeply painful, even traumatic experience with a host of emotions. Fear, jealousy, rage, sorrow, and above all, loneliness, to just name a few. Therapist Rachel Sussman, author of the Breakup Bible, joins us today to walk us through the steps of recovery so that you could turn your breakup into a breakthrough. Whether you're a heartbroken 20-something or a divorced woman with three kids, Sussman's book is a smart woman's guide to the necessary healing, understanding, and transformation necessary for a new you. While you might be thinking that your life will never get better and that you're just wither away in loneliness, the end of a relationship truly can be the beginning of the rest of your life. Also with us is dating expert Mark Darien, author of the men's blog, AnimusEmpire.com, and he's here to give us the male perspective on the issue. Rachel, Mark, welcome to my show.
Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here. Great to meet you.
It's great to meet you, too, and look forward to, to talking to you. The Breakup Bible, it was, to me, such a relevant book because the truth of the matter is when most people break up, they lose their focus, they lose their priorities, they lose their... The most important thing is they lose their sense of identity.
Absolutely. And, you know, people often talk to me that they have a hard time getting support after a breakup and divorce because, you know, when someone dies, if you have a tragedy in your family, you know, folks come around to help out. But, you know, a lot of society doesn't consider a divorce or a breakup an applicable tragedy. So, you know, people are really looking for support and some guidance after a difficult life event.
Absolutely. They're looking for guidance, and very often they find it with the very wrong people.
Or, you know, you spill over and you get advice from the wrong person, which can actually make it worse. You know, if you don't feel validated, you can feel even more alone, right?
Absolutely. And one of the reasons people stay in bad marriages is because the fear of loneliness is greater than the feeling of misery.
Oh, you know, fear can really make you stuck. And, you know, when people come to me or when I interview people that are going through are in difficult relationships and I ask them why they won't leave, I mean, they list so many fears, so many things they're afraid of, afraid to support themselves financially, afraid that people won't, you know, include them in social gatherings, and the fear that they'll always be alone, that they'll never meet anyone again. That's a big one.
Correct. I mean, people fear generally three things. They fear their health, they fear their identity in terms of can they make a living, and they fear love.
Yeah.
These are the three core fears. And everyone feels, am I ever going to meet someone? Can anyone love me? Now, there are divorces where they have divorce parties and everything is fine and everyone's great, but that's the minority.
It is. Okay? You're absolutely right.
And people need to know that. What you see on a TV show is not reality.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the first thing that you tell them after they pour out their story and pour out their anger and disappointment and so on and so forth?
Well, you know, I really try to give people hope. And I let them know that, you know, the end of a relationship and the end of a marriage is sometimes, believe it or not, an opportunity for a vast amount of growth. That, you know, look, I'm not a Pollyanna, and anyone goes through something like this, they will have a hard time. But after you get through the hard time, you know, there's an incredible amount of knowledge and growth that you can have about yourself, about why you chose the person that you did, about how you behaved in the relationship. And once you get through this, you know, you can really go out there and live your best life ever.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we broken up with somebody and then 2 years later, and it feels terrible in the moment, then 2 years later you think, wow, I'm so happy that happened.
And, you know, and more times than not, people do come back to me and say, hey, remember when you told me a couple years ago that I was going to be so happy? Well, I am. I mean, I had a client yesterday who said to me, you know, I never would have thought I'd say this, but I am so happy now.
And even if you have to delude yourself to believe that, it's still okay, right?
And that's great that we're saying this and letting people know, but people are really scared and they don't believe, you know, people really believe I will never be happy again, you know?
Right, and that is, I guess, people's greatest fear, because
exactly.
Their greatest fear is their feelings,
right?
Not necessarily the facts. The emotional brain is a lot more powerful than the rational mind.
Exactly.
What happens? Did you ever have a case where the man or the woman was such a ridiculous, cruel person, and that when they were broken up with, either one, they knew it was 100% their fault or 90% their fault? And did you ever give them the advice, well, why don't you go back? This may never work, but just admit that you're a son of a bitch and you made no effort and you just destroyed this relationship? Do you find that there are times where people break up and get back together and it actually is good?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, two different thoughts. I mean, when someone is as cruel, when someone is emotionally abusive, when someone is as nasty as you're describing, Dr. Gluck, more times than not, that person doesn't get the help that they need to be able to admit that they made a terrible mistake. If that happens, it's a beautiful thing. And obviously, I would say, you know, look, with all that you've learned, with all that you've grown, maybe you do want to reach out to your ex and write a letter or send a note apologizing. But that doesn't happen, really very often. And to your other point, yes, people can get back together. People do get back together. You know, I write about in my book how my mother's parents, my maternal grandparents, divorced before anyone divorces. This is in like the 1940s.
Oh, right.
And they were divorced for 5 years and then they remarried. So they were in vogue, you know, way back then. And I think their second marriage to each other was an excellent marriage because they had both changed, and they also saw in those 5 years they were apart how difficult their life was. It was an easier life when they came back together. So yes, people do change and they can get back together.
Most people grow old and they don't grow up. And you're in a difficult position because they're coming to you for comfort and guidance. At what point do you point out where they were a part of the problem?
I'm pretty straight with my clients. And, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to have a couple in a couple session, I get to see both of their dysfunction. Okay. I also see both of their strengths.
Right.
You know, I always look for people's strengths, but I do see both of their dysfunctions. And it's never 50-50. I mean,
no, there's no.
Yeah, it's always the girl's fault, right?
Yeah. You never know.
I'm just being objective here.
Well, I mean, sometimes I'll say it's 90-10, you know, but, you know, you can be married or dating someone who's highly provocative, and if you're taking the bait and throwing it back to them or needling them, you're just as much as fault, you know. So if that couple breaks up and one person stays with me or I get to see someone individually in that couple, I will say to them what they're doing wrong. I mean, I always try to be kind, but I'll say, you know, look, you really need to take some responsibility here. And even if this relationship doesn't work out, if you don't take responsibility for doing X, Y, or Z, you're just going to bring it with you until your next relationship.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be better? It's amazing to think that in order to cut hair, you need a license. In order to do a manicure, you need a license. You don't need any training to get married. Wouldn't it, you know, for people to invest who are dating, to invest in 6 months of couple coaching to find out rather than if they're made for one another, how to resolve problems, how to fight, wouldn't that be just...
Well, that's what priests do, right?
That's what priests do.
Which I never understood because they're virgins. Like, why would you get advice on that from a virgin?
I don't... I think they just kind of... They don't... Do that.
Rabbis, too. I mean, you know, I think that the tradition is that people of the cloth or of the clergy are allegedly supposed to be able to give this kind of advice, but they really, I mean, they're not trained. But, you know, you bring up a good point because people always say to me, well, what does it mean that marriage takes work? I mean, what does that mean that relationships take work? And I have my own, you know, analogy that I use. I say, look, you go to college to get a degree. You know, you work hard at your job. Your job says, oh, this is going to be your new responsibility. Take a class on this. Learn about this. I mean, I'm constantly seeing people reading or doing things to make them better at their job. They work hard at the gym. You put all this work into yourself. You know, they're eating gluten-free. But yet, what work are they putting into their relationship?
Exactly. And I always give them the illustration of the law of entropy in physics, that energy always seeks a lower level, which basically means, I tell them, everything turns to shit. If you don't reinvent it, it gets old and boring.
Yeah. Right. And the work that you talk about, that's all fun work, right? If it's what you really want to do, then it's fun and you don't mind doing it, like being in a relationship.
I think it is. But even with all the excellent information there is out there today regarding how important it is to work on your relationship, people still go into relationships and they expect that they're just naturally supposed to survive, even if you put nothing into it.
It's amazing. It's imagine every one of us probably own a car or have. Okay, imagine not doing an oil change, not putting anything into it. How long does the car last? What, a year and a half before the motor seizes?
That's a great point.
Everything breaks down. Everything breaks down. Yeah. Okay, I mean, even my computer. I never had a computer last 2 years. I think they do that on purpose. But relationships have to. Because what happens is, and I love when I hear this from clients and they don't get it. I've been married to this person for 15 years and they haven't changed at all.
Yeah.
Or better yet, and they're changing on me.
Yeah.
Well, it
took
15 years to change. You're supposed to change every day.
Absolutely.
For the better.
Look, and I also read a great article that said some statistics like most people break up or divorce about the same problems they had when they were dating.
Of course.
So people date, they have these issues, they decide to get engaged and get married anyway, just thinking that these problems will go away,
the
and they don't.
So.
Exactly. It is all, you know.
Right. If the sucks in the beginning, it's not getting better.
No, absolutely.
Okay? It's not getting better.
You always have to be really worried when you're dating a girl and the sex is awesome because you know you're not thinking something, right?
Mm. Well, at least you know that's covered. But, you know, again, the ability to communicate, the ability to have some shared philosophy.
Absolutely.
You know, the ability to be able to not be defensive.
Yeah, that's an important one and a hard one.
To enter into each other's worlds and appreciate each other's worlds. Don't, you know, don't compromise. Have different experiences.
But the problem when the sex is good, and it should be good for the first 6 months to 18 months, according to, you know, all the evolutionary anthropologists, you know, the sex should be good for up to 18 months.
I don't know where they get that from.
I don't know, but, you know.
Then you bring the whips out.
Look, you know, I'm a big proponent of couples taking their time and not rushing into living together and not rushing into getting engaged, because you kind of have to be together for a year, year and a half to see what this person is really like. You know, when the relationship cools down a little bit, are you still in love with this person? Do you still respect this person? Do you still get along with this person? And if you rush into it after 6 months or 8 months, you have this hot, steamy sex life, who knows? In a year, year and a half, you might not even like each other.
Exactly. And I usually say that what happens is sexual intimacy freezes emotional intimacy, and all of a sudden everything becomes around sex, and sex could be, you know, like everything else, it's a great drug. You know, it distorts everything.
Absolutely.
and it doesn't give a reality. Now, if they come for pre-dating coaching, it cuts down on the amount of time they have to wait because you're going through the issues at a faster pace. But you still need time to find out what is this person really like.
But, you know, another problem is, I mean, I love working with dating couples, but, more times than not, a dating couple will say to me, well, we're just dating. If we're going to couples counseling, we shouldn't be even dating, you know? So there still is like a stigma that if you're in a dating relationship and you're seeing a counselor, something must be wrong.
Well, that's why we change, meaning I do executive life coaching, mm-hmm. You know, and I combine it with neuroplasticity or medical hypnosis. So the idea is good, better, best. You know, you don't go for coaching because there's a problem. You go because you don't know everything.
Right.
Okay. And when someone has 35, 37 years of experience, you may learn something. So, you know, you try to take the stigma out of it. And that's why very often people will not go to a psychiatrist or psychologist because for them it means they have a problem.
Exactly.
Rather than have a problem, why not at the end of the day you go to school to learn?
Exactly.
And why not go to an expert who knows more than you?
No, you're absolutely right. A couple of years ago I was interviewed by a really bright reporter from the New York Times about an article they did in the style section on, you know, like 10 questions you should ask your partner before you get engaged. And it was a very intelligent article on what couples really should be discussing before they get engaged and before they get married. Sex, finances. I mean, questions like, how will you handle it if you find yourself 5 years into marriage emotionally attracted or physically attracted to another person? I mean, how might we handle something like that? You know, finances, religion, all sorts of important questions that couples should talk about.
What is really flirting?
Yeah. Wait,
what's flirting?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
well,
some people like,
friendly.
I'm Reformed Jew. I touch everyone. You know, I hug everyone.
Depends where you touch them.
I mean, I'm just a warm person. I was always like that.
Yes.
You know, people don't get handshakes. They get a kiss.
Yeah.
If you came to my house, my parents are dead, but you would be your kissed hello. You're hugged hello, and then you're fed.
Is lovely.
Which is, you know, the way you were raised.
Yes, absolutely. You know?
So, but it needs to be understood, because what happens if people don't understand the basic nature of the other person, they feel betrayal.
Right.
And when all you have is the person experiencing who they are.
Right.
And if you don't get along with who you basically are, it's not a good place to start.
Well, if you want to talk about infidelity, since we're heading in that direction, you're talking about flirting. Read a great article in the Wall Street Journal this week about really what is infidelity and how many couples suffer from infidelity. I mean, this HBO show, The Affair, is getting a lot of press. A lot of people are talking about it. And, you know, I think people know when they're cheating. Every relationship
caught. That's when you really
well,
know.
Well, every relationship has a contract. And you know if you're breaking that contract. You know, I think men and women know when they're being friendly and when they're being more than friendly. I think they know when they have feelings for someone, emotional or sexual. And if you're going to act upon that, sometimes even emotional. If you're, you know, having an emotional affair, that's an affair. I mean, that's when you're meeting kind of with someone in a clandestine way. You're telling them secrets. You're looking in their eyes. You know, and if you're in a committed relationship and you're doing that outside of your commitment, that's an affair.
The big sign of
that's
that affair.
It's so difficult, though, to be honest with yourself. But that. I mean,
that's the point. Usually when an affair starts, it always is accompanied by lying.
Yes, that's a great.
It is always accompanied by lying. You know, you're just not telling the truth. Okay.
Sometimes to yourself, you're not telling.
You're not
the
telling
truth.
The truth. You know, to yourself, and it also depends upon who you are as a person. I find this happens a lot with the very successful CEOs who were the biggest nerds, nothing in junior high school, nothing in high school, nothing in college, nothing in graduate school. They moved up the ladder. They got a little bit more handsome and a lot of millions of dollars. And now every woman wants them, and they can't say no.
I see this all the time. I mean, I've got a case in my practice right now with this. I mean, a lovely woman. She was, you know, she stood behind her man in every possible way. Bright, successful woman herself, and really helped him with his career. And once he got to a certain place, he had an affair, and she found out, and he left her. And
all right, so that should be something in the prenup. For every $1 million I make, I get a bang, two mistresses. That's just fair.
Maybe
it's like when you marry an NBA star. It's like when you marry an NBA star. You know he's going to be cheating on you, so just keep it to a minimum, right?
Look, you know, I think that people do need to be open to this kind of stuff. I mean, I think walking into a marriage thinking that, you know, it's that this person is never, ever going to cheat on you, especially if it's someone who's very wealthy or very successful in the public eye, you got to be naive.
And I so agree. And what you said is, as almost jokingly, is absolutely true, because you have to know how you interpret it. I had one case. The husband was a doctor. Cardiologist. Pediatric cardiologist. And his wife was a nurse, and he was doing this complex surgery on a small child. It was supposed to take 4 hours. It took 18. At the end of the 18 hours, you know, he just hugged and kissed his surgical nurse. And he got guilty right away. He called his wife and told her, and she divorced him.
That's one of the silliest stories I ever heard.
Right.
Well, it's a good thing it got rid of her.
And that's the point. It's the point. Meaning,
yes, I agree.
Meaning, you know, they had kids. They never, but was so thin-skinned, and that's why it needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
If you're that thin-skinned, who wants to be with someone who says, "You just looked at that waitress. You just look." And you look at people.
Look, that's insecurity.
Look,
That's paranoia. You know,
right.
I refereed an argument between a couple. The other day where the woman had run into the friend of an old boyfriend and didn't introduce her current husband in a crowded restaurant. And, you know, the husband became very angry about it. I mean, come on, get over it. I mean,
really?
You know, people have pasts before you know, meet someone.
If she wasn't going to cheat on you, now she is.
Well, and I see that happen.
When you
You know, if you accuse someone regularly of cheating, or if you don't trust your partner, I've seen people say, "Well, they don't trust me anyway." You know,
absolutely. And it goes also back to something that everyone should remember: two people who are half don't make a whole; they make a quarter. Okay.
That's an interesting statistic.
Multiplication.
Okay. Well, this is Gluckism.
Right. Okay.
You know, you really have to be a whole person yourself.
Yeah,
and
no,
if you're not just date casually,
yeah.
you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, or date as many people as you want, but realize that if you're not together, you can't build, because there's no foundation.
But the problem is, what I regularly see is, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, fear. Because you're afraid of to be alone. You're afraid of being alone because you're insecure, because you're not a whole person. People put themselves out there and date with a fantasy that meeting the right woman, meeting the right man is going to make them whole and going to fill them up. So we have all these people out there in the dating world who shouldn't be there to begin with.
Right. So we are – Michael, Rachel, and Dr. G, we're all letting them know – Don't date.
And I write all about this in my book. I mean, I wrote a 300-page book, and my dating chapter is like page 290, you know? It's like, you know, get over your breakup, do your work, work on yourself, turn yourself into a fully actualized, confident, happy, healthy person, and then go date. And then you're putting yourself out there in a way that you're going to attract the right kind of person. And also, you're healthy enough that if you attract someone who's not healthy, you'll know it. You know, you'll see the signs.
That's not the low-hanging fruit, though. I know whenever I write something that basically tells people that to not go for the low-hanging fruit, as I write it, I'm thinking, okay, well, only 5% of people are going to listen to this.
And, you know, if you've just had a breakup or divorce and you're out there all, you know, hang dog and you're depressed and someone's attracted to you, who's that person who's attracted to you? That's a person who's looking for a victim. That's a person who's looking for a damsel in distress.
He sees your true inner beauty.
Yeah, right.
I would actually say that they're looking either for a victim or for a Band-Aid, one or the other.
Yeah, or they're looking for someone who's very insecure they can be a knight in shining armor.
Exactly, or control them.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, some people just really like to control, and others like to victimize and squeeze squeeze everything out and let them go. And to be fair, we all agree it could be the man, it could be the woman. Meaning it, it could go either way.
It can.
There's not, you know, we don't want to stereotype.
No, I mean, I see women doing that just as much as men, you know, running out and dating before they're ready.
You know, I tell guys all the time, if she shows up on the first date with the dominatrix outfit.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
She's looking for a victim there.
Or she's looking for a good night.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how many people come up and ask that question, but that's an interesting interesting thought. When you see people and you tell them this is what you need to do, get yourself together. Usually, their first question is, "How? Where do I start? Who do I talk to? Who do I trust? How do I change myself when I'm not seeing you because I can't afford to see you every day?"
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, this is why I wrote a book called The Breakup Bible, to help people that are going through divorces and breakups. And when people come to see me or they go out and buy a book or talk to a friend in the early stages of breakup and divorce, they can be very depressed, very anxious, very overwhelmed. They're not sleeping. They're not eating. They're not going to the gym. They're not taking care of themselves. Even when you give that person advice, they might not be in a place where they're able to, you know, to take it or hear it. So, you know, my method of helping women and men through a breakup or divorce is I have a three-step process. The first one is just called healing. You just have to take your time and settle in and acknowledge the fact that you're going to feel lousy for a while. And I think that in the world we live in, people are so uncomfortable feeling bad that they're constantly going through all sorts of motions to try to bury their pain. And you just have to kind of sit with it for a while. And I give all sorts of suggestions and exercises on how to just take care of yourself and sit with your pain and sit with your hurt. And if you're able to do that, eventually you will start coming around. You will start getting better.
Yeah, I think I'm an asterisk of what you just said, because what happens is we have a society where people, if they lose their cell phones for 5 minutes, they freak out.
Exactly.
If they lose, they can't use the computer, they freak out. They have no patience for anything, not for a line. You know, you wait in line, you know, for some food in Eastern Europe and many places, you wait days for food.
People regularly say to me, "When am I going to feel better? When am I going to feel better? When am I going to feel better?" And, you know, it's a valid question because they feel bad, but no one has the answer to that. You know, I always say it takes time, the passage of time, and you have to relax into your situation and you have to work on yourself. And, you know, if you do that, you will feel better. I can't tell you when, but you will.
Yeah, I think it's also important to understand that feeling bad or feeling sad specifically, that's adaptive. That's a good thing. That's what your body's supposed to do. I don't think the question is, when do I feel better? It's, wow, it's good at least I feel bad. There is a lot of information.
It's good that I feel.
Right. Yeah.
I usually go a little bit in this because my practice is a little bit different. I usually, when you think better, you feel better. So let's change
the way you
which part of your brain is directly in gear. Because rationally, this may have been the best thing that ever happened to you, whether you stay together or not.
Yeah.
Because when something doesn't work, it's always because there's a weak link.
Right.
And it's usually on both parts.
If you're very unhappy in your job, you look for a new job.
Correct.
You know, but yet people
don't.
As we're talking about, they don't. You're right. They get stuck. And then, you know, magically after they get out of the relationship, they look back at their ex and, you know, there's a period of time that I call hero worship, where they think their ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend is just the most amazing thing in the world.
Right.
And all they see is how great they were. I had a client yesterday saying, "I know he turned into a terrible person, but I think back on that first year and how amazing he was and how great he was." And I say, look, he was a really insecure, narcissistic person who worked so hard to charm you, to pull you in. And you have to see that that might have not been the real person that he was. But also, to your point, people change.
Right.
You know?
People change.
People change.
And sometimes you have to not live life through the rearview mirror.
And you can't get hung up over.
Right. It happens.
But 10 years ago, he or she was so amazing. You know, you have to say to yourself, but she's not amazing anymore, or this thing has run its course. And, you know, what you can take from it is, I believe in love. I want to be in a healthy relationship. This thing ran its course. I got to go, you know? You got to move on.
Right.
It always helps to be able to meet a lot of people. I mean, of course, it's important to work on yourself and get that handle. But once you do, it's – I mean, I tell guys, you have to talk to a lot of girls, not so you can have sex with a lot of girls, but you can be more objective about the girls you do go out with. Because if you're only going out with one girl a month – well, every girl you go out with then is your new future wife, hopefully. Like, that's what you're thinking.
Again, people then tend to pick the low-hanging fruit. So I always encourage, you know, variety, no commitment, spread it out, get to know yourself, you know, get to know your own strengths, do a lot of, you know, ask the questions of, you know, what are my personal philosophy? Like, you know, the basic who am I? You know, I think, therefore I am. Well, what do you think?
You know, a problem that I see out in the dating world, and I want to hear you guys' opinion. I'm really interested about this. Today, so many people use Match.com here in New York. I know OkCupid is very popular. Now everyone's on Tinder and Hinge. There's never been more ways to meet people before.
Right.
And yet everyone's looking for something else. And what I often see is a majority – okay, what I see is a majority of women that are on these dating sites really do want to find a relationship. I mean, most women want to nest. They want to be in a relationship. They want – they do believe in marriage. They want to see themselves in a relationship, leading marriage, and if they want children, leading to children. And to your point, Mark, a lot of dating coaches, you know, and friends encourage their guy friends, get out there and date. Date a million women, sleep with a million women. So I think what's going on out there in the world is you have a higher percentage of men that are just out there looking to have an experience or have a good time, or they don't know what they want. And you have a lot of women who really do want a relationship. And, you know, I constantly hear stories are, I had coffee with three guys this week, or, you know, no one called me, or I had a few dates with this guy and then he disappeared. He never called me.
See, Richard, you're setting me up because people worry about love, money, and health. The reason why I started Platinum Juan, and I have a partner, Rory Sassoon, is because it you should know who you are first. You should also know exactly what you're looking for. You don't have to date a million people. In fact, you don't have to go through a lot of numbers. So when we put people together, you know, I would say 9 out of 10 times, if not 9.5 out of 10 times, it's an amazing date.
Look, I'm a big fan of matchmakers because you get to screen the people beforehand and you know exactly what they're looking for. But if you meet someone on Match.com or JDate or Christian Mingle, you don't know.
Right.
And I mean, I wish people were more transparent. I mean, they should really have, you know, categories that people don't lie about, like looking for a relationship leading to marriage,
correct,
or really just looking to have experience.
And when
I think it's on each person to develop an intuition about what somebody is actually looking for. And I don't think that you have to date.
That's why.
I think if you date enough, it's no problem.
It's not really going to be a problem because people lie all the time.
That's what I think.
And that's why, it's besides coaching, they get forensic profile to see, you know, really what's going on with their life. It's pretty intricate. And not to plug Platinum Point, but at the end of the day, the relationships become permanent. I put together 25 marriages that are still exist.
I love it. And I want to hear all about it. You know, there's a dating coach, a woman who's I think she's written a few books. I've read some articles. If you hire her, she does something called like a 360-degree, like based on like what they do, these 360-degree interviews in corporate America. So let's say you've had 25 Match.com dates in the past year and none of them have worked out and people don't know why. And if someone disappears, honestly, guys, you don't know why. You know, you think, did I have food in my teeth? Was it something I said? Did I talk too much? Maybe they don't like blondes. But what this woman found, she would call all these people and say, look, you know, don't be freaked out. I was hired by this woman, Jane Doe. You dated her a year ago. Do you remember? Can I ask you some questions? And more times times than not, the reasons that these guys disappeared had nothing to do with what the women thought they were. And, you know, most guys would just say, I remember her. The girl who worked in the medical office. She was a nice girl. But, you know, I had five girls I was dating, I was taking out that week. Or, you know, I met someone the week before that I really just liked so much better. And she's my fiance now, you know. But people just, you know, you go on a date with them, whatever, they disappear.
Absolutely. And probably if I said dating, it's not a dating service. It's only matchmaking for those who want to be in a serious relationship.
Which I love.
That's all it is. If you want to date, go to a dating service.
Yeah. You know.
So who gets over a divorce or a breakup quicker, men or women?
I think it depends on the mental health of the individual person. The more confidence you have, the more emotional insight you have, if you have a good support system, if you work on yourself, you're going to get over the breakup or the divorce. The people who years later are still crying about their breakup or, you know, negatively engaging with their ex, you know, these people oftentimes tend to have abandonment issues, you know, real and perceived. I mean, you know, a real abandonment issue could be, you know, my father died when I was 18 years old, tragically, and I never worked through that. And now I'm reliving that in my breakup, you know, or a perceived abandonment issue could be someone that really struggled with a learning disability or wasn't popular or, you know, had other, you know, psychological
issues. That's real, too.
And it's that just, is real. A little less tangible.
It's tangible, you know, and people don't give you as much credit for it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. You know. But, you know, a breakup or a divorce is an opportunity to see if you fall into that. You know, someone comes to me 2 years after divorce and they're still sobbing. I mean, that more times than not, that person might have some abandonment issues. And that's what I look for, you know. On the other hand, I've seen people who don't have abandonment issues. I mean, you can be very devastated over a breakup or divorce. If your marriage ends and you have children and you have to really process the end of your family as you know it, that's a very hard thing to go through. But that person will do the work and they will come out at the other side.
So, I completely agree.
Let's say if a person is healthy in an unhealthy state of mind when they do get divorced,
right?
What's the ideal length of time it should be for them to get over it?
Well, I say 6 month to 18 months, depending on the length of the relationship. Were you dating or were you married? If you were dating, were you living together? If you're married, how many years? Obviously, a marriage is going to be harder to get over, or you're going to have a little more time than a 6 month dating relationship. I mean, you know, when you're married, you go through the engagement, you go through the wedding, you have the wedding gifts, you have, you join lives together, and especially if you have children. I mean, that's a process. It's going to take some time.
Divorce on children. Now, I always tell my clients, you never, ever, ever put down your spouse, you know, your father, your
fully
mother,
agree.
Ever, under
fully.
Any circumstances, you know, and very often you have the chance of having a better relationship with your child if you really make it that way. So, A, you agree. Do you find that advice, that you're giving that advice as well?
I always give that advice. And I have a whole chapter, you know, in the Breakup Bible where I really give, you know, even models, charts on how to deal with an ex, even how to communicate about uncomfortable situations. I have a list of rules. And, you know, I say point blank, never, ever, ever put down your ex. You
could
do it behind closed doors, but never in front of your children. And a lot of the research about children in divorce say it's not so much the divorce that messes up the kids. It's how the parents treat each other afterwards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are families who are divorced. You wouldn't even know they're divorced.
Yeah.
They get together, they're friends, and so on and so forth.
As it should be.
As it should be, because you know what? Nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
Okay? And often when it does last for a very long time, it's because people allow themselves to develop individually, develop other interests, and they're honest and they communicate and they balance. They have a good balance between their relationship with their wife and their kids and their friends and their business and their hobbies and themselves.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's how it lasts.
Yeah. You know what kids actually end up doing very well, surprisingly, is when the dad dies unexpectedly, like either at war or in a car accident. And so they live out this fantasy of their father, and since they died on good terms, the mother is always saying good things about
the
father.
Right.
So there is still a sense of a father figure there, even though he isn't actually physically there.
Yeah.
And the kid grows up very well, better than he would have probably if the father was there.
Actually, I've had that experience. I was together 30 years with my wife, and she died of breast cancer, and I have two girls. And they did, you know, so many good things were said about their mother, so they have no mother issues. So that actually is true, by the way.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. And, you know, it kills me when I see people, you know, trying to brainwash their children or telling them, you know, your father's a terrible person, your father cheated on me, I've seen that, or vice versa. You know, they're trying to get revenge on their partner, but all they're doing is damaging their children.
Absolutely.
And it's like criminal. I mean, you know, people should have to go to a training class if they're caught doing something like that.
Absolutely, because, you know, if you hit a child, you're going to jail. But if you destroy their mind, you're going nowhere.
It's terrible. And, you know, I know of divorces where the teenage kids have to lie to the parents. I mean, they're going, you know, the mom will say, well, have you spoken to your father? No, no, I haven't spoken to him, when really they're talking every day.
Of course.
Or they're going over to their father's house and they have to lie to their mother and say they're going to a friend's house. It's terrible. I mean, no one should ever have to go through this.
Now, do you find for yourself that you go with your clients into who would be good for you?
I do think about it sometimes. I've yet to try to make a match because I do have a colleague who I like very much who made a match once and it did not work out well.
We have to talk. We have some mutual referrals to do.
Absolutely. But, you know, what I try to do instead is just, you know, say to my clients, I see you with this type of a girl or with this type of a guy or something.
Well, we'll
like
just
that.
Schedule them right next to each other, so maybe they'll meet in your waiting room.
Well, if you remember The Sopranos from way back when, Tony Soprano had an affair with a woman he met in the waiting room of his psychologist's office.
Right.
So, you know, well, I often wonder what goes on outside in my waiting room.
Well, you have chairs, not beds.
Yes,
right?
exactly. Yes, I do have chairs.
Did you ever see a divorce that came out without a hitch? No problems. Everybody was happy. Everyone wanted it, and everyone stayed friendly.
It's the minimal of what happens, but yes, I do see it. I mean, I wish I saw more of that. You know, look, when Gwyneth Paltrow and her husband from Coldplay divorced a couple of years ago, they came out with this like conscious uncoupling moniker that everyone kind of laughed about. But you know what? It's really a great thing. I mean, you know, people should really try the best they can to have the smoothest divorce possible, where they're kind to each other, where they're generous with each other, where they think about what's best for you, what's best for the kids. And, you know, I do think it happens sometimes, but unfortunately, more times than not, what we see is couples arguing about, you know, the littlest things and, you know, having really painful divorces.
What do you find, because I found this, I found some people, even after the divorce, men and women, they'll hire private investigators to follow their life. They're divorced.
These people are ruining their lives.
Correct.
You know?
Or what about when an ex-girlfriend stalks you on Facebook?
Well, that happens pretty often. And, you know, again, you know, stalking, stalkers, male and female, it's not about you. It's not about the breakup. It's about their own abandonment issues, their own insecurities, their own paranoia. And it's sad, you know, and these people obviously need help, but that's what it's about.
Yep. It's a bit of a pain, though. It's, you know, Facebook has created a new way of following.
Well, hey, if your ex-girlfriend's stalking you on Facebook, that's like, hey, I must have done something right.
Well, I hope you did do something right.
Must have been a really good boyfriend.
Look, if you want to avoid stalking post-breakup, you have to try the best you can to have the cleanest, healthiest breakup. That means, you know, break up with someone honestly, face to face, not over text, not over email, not through a friend. Tell this person if you're losing interest, if you're unhappy, what you're unhappy about. You know, communicate it. Communicate it through. I think what people freak out over are these hit and run breakups when they think everything's great and then all of a sudden, you know, their girlfriend or their wife comes home and says, I'm not happy, I'm ending it. Or and then you find out they're having an affair. I mean, you know, this really rocks people's world. But just, you know, if you can have a clean relationship, if you can be honest, if you can tell the person if you're unhappy, you have a right to break up with someone. Just try to do it the right
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, most people are like monkeys. They don't let go of one branch until they have another.
And they're afraid of confrontation.
And of course. And they're also afraid of for some people, who could get very vindictive and vicious.
Yes.
So the fear of confrontation is not necessarily irrational.
You're right. You are right.
You know, so what happens is that you have to be realistic on what you can say and can't say.
It's true.
If you're married, you know, to someone who is extremely vicious and will try to hurt you and your children, well, then at that point you have to do what you need to do. What is your advice if one person is divorced from another, they're still in love, but the other party wants nothing to do with them? Do you ever advise them to try to keep in touch or leave them alone?
Leave them alone. I mean, you know, I'm a big proponent in relationships ending without children in zero contact. You know, again, in the rare relationship, passion has died and you just end up being friends and you have kind of a platonic breakup, those people can stay friends. Again, that's really a minority. But, you know, if some person decides that they don't want to be with you any longer and you still love that person, you also have to ask yourself, how can you still love someone who doesn't love you anymore or doesn't want to be with you anymore? Or why did they fall out of love? And, you know, but you've got to let that person go.
Right. I mean, sometimes you also have to realize that things are cyclical.
Yes. And okay? People change.
Because people change and you're not – you may not have – amazing, great sex 40 years into the marriage.
I think people need to understand that and accept that early on.
Absolutely. And that's the point of reinventing, going on vacation, doing things together, building something together. So you build something deeper than just what you built when you were 23 or 25.
You know, you're absolutely right. And yet, you know, people still go into marriage, especially if you really enjoy sex or you have a very high sex drive, you know, wanting that to continue on. And I often, you know, I know this sounds stereotypical, but I often get a couple in my practice that would have 2, 3, 4 children and the husband wants regular sex and the wife's like sitting there sobbing, you know, saying like, I've got 3 little kids at home, you know, I work part-time and then I get into bed at night, I'm exhausted and you want to have sex, I can't handle it. And, you know, and the guy's just sitting there looking very crestfallen, they don't understand, you know, they feel rejected, it affects their self-esteem. I see a lot of that.
Which is why talking about this beforehand really works.
Yeah, and, you know, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear your sex life is going to, you know, wax and wane over the years. You know, you want to just think it's going to be great.
We could go on forever because you are such a great interviewer, and this book is absolutely necessary and marvelous.
Thank you
so much.
Lots
of people write good books, but they're not as – meaning everyone should buy this book.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr.
And I look forward to getting to know you.
Wonderful. Me too.
Great show, guys.
Thank you.
I really want to once again thank Rachel Sussman for coming onto a show. You need to pick up a copy of her book, The Breakup Bible. It is for those who've broken up. It's on Amazon. And visit SussmanCounseling.com. Also, while you're there, check out Mark Darien's blog, AnimusEmpire.com, and buy a copy of his book, too, Man's Guide to Anxiety. I would be remiss not to remind you to go to my website, GluckSolutions.com. My specialty is neuroplasticity, hypnosis, executive life coaching. You don't need to have a problem to find out what you could be doing better to make your life really more worth living. I cover everything from addictions to eating disorders to alcohol to shyness to divorce. The list really goes on to loneliness. Weight is a big one, fear. We don't have time to go on for everything. But if you change your mind, you change your life. We also want to remind you that if you are looking to be married, Platinum Pois is a premier, the most premier service that puts people together for marriage. And that I run with my partner, Rory Sassoon. Looking forward to hearing from you. Call 212-599-3195. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Till next time.